Bartleby the Scrivener, written by Herman Melville.
Bartleby the Scrivener by Herman Melville.
Bartleby the Scrivener. A radio feature realized by Fadil and the underrated Background Girlies.
The Heroes of Tomorrow minus one.
Today we are going to show how Bartleby the Scrivener fits into modern capitalism and Marx's ideology.
Bartleby the Scrivener forces us to take a good, long look at capitalism and to see the implications and consequences it has. From the get-go of the story, we come to find that we are dealing with a lawyer, the unnamed narrator, and his law clerks of Wall Street. This lawyer is not a typical courtroom lawyer, but a business lawyer who deals with rich man bonds. The narrator also mentions John Jacob Astor, a prominent figure who is famous for amassing a large private fortune and is known as the first American multimillionaire. From these characters, we can deduce that we are dealing with the relationship between the working class and the people who benefit from them. When we take an even closer look at the workers in the story, more of the theme emerges. The workers don't exist outside of Wall Street and the office. The workers are nicknamed in relation to their jobs. For example, Gingernut is named so because he often fetches gingernuts for the office. The line between workers and individuals become even more blurred.
In the eyes of Karl Marx, the world can be categorized in two groups, the capitalists and the workers. He wanted to change the capitalist economic system that was existing in Marx's days. Herman Melville was expressing similar ideas in his writing. Melville's Bartleby the Scrivener is an exposition of the working man's existence. From a Marxist perspective, what Bartleby refuses to do is the act of circulation. He refuses to become a machine. When Bartleby refuses to do any work at all, he exhibits the mental and physical exhaustion characteristic of Marx's alienated worker. Like the stereotypical bourgeois capitalist depicted by Karl Marx, the nameless narrator lives a life of lavish luxury, relying on the work of his scriveners, yet claiming all of the spoils. The final line spoken by the narrator, "Ah, Bartleby, ah, humanity," is a reflection of his self-absorption as he seems to come to a sudden realization of Bartleby's true intentions. Bartleby is a warning for the readers of the pressures of conforming to capitalism and the resulting destruction of those who fail to do so. Only under a different economic situation can the Bartlebys of the world realize their full potentials, though the capitalists would prefer not to let the new system come about.
Most of the time, I'm clear focused all around. Most of the time, I can keep both feet on the ground. I can follow the path, I can read the signs. Stay right with it when the road unwinds. I can handle what I stumble upon. I don't even notice he's gone most of the time. Most of the time, I'm a cool underneath. Most of the time, I can keep it right between my teeth. Solve any riddle, I can hold my own. Deal with the situation right down to the bone. I can survive, I can endure. I don't even think about her most of the time. Most of the time, my head is on straight. Most of the time, strong enough and not to hate. I got enough faith and I got enough strength. I keep it all away, way beyond arm's length. I can smile in the face of mankind. Don't even remember what her lips felt like on mine most of the time. Most of the time, she ain't even in my mind. I wouldn't know her if I saw her. She's that far behind. Most of the time, I can't even be sure if she was ever with me or if I was ever with her. Most of the time, I'm halfway as content most of the time. I know exactly where it all went. I don't cheat on myself, I don't run and hide. Hide from the feelings that are buried inside. I don't compromise or pretend. I don't care if I ever see her again.
Today we are going to talk about Henry David Thoreau and Herman Melville. Henry David Thoreau and Herman Melville focused their writings on how man was affected by nature. Melville and Thoreau argued that resistance to authority should be carried out based on one's own principles. Bartleby appears to base his continuous refusal to do his job because of his principles.
Both writers were concerned with deep meanings, those messages, themes or concerns that lie below simple surfaces.
To this day, Thoreau is considered one of the most influential political thinkers in the history of the United States, and his teachings have found worldwide expression. He thinks government only gets in the way of people's efforts to create a free society. The solution, he says, is a better government. Most men serve the state as machines and associate themselves with a disgraceful government that allows slavery. Any government, he reasons, is going to be imperfect. Even the best politicians and reformers have limitations. Even a democracy, which seems to be the best form of government yet, isn't a perfect, free and enlightened state, because it lacks respect for the individual.
Now to Melville. The question of who he was, of course, Melville was no matter. His entire work is a research trip in its own right. When Bartleby answered, "I prefer not to," after his boss asked him to do his job, he irritates everyone in the office. His co-workers and his employer react with various degrees of ire and disbelief.
Today we are going to talk about the influence of transcendentalism in Bartleby the Scrivener, written by Herman Melville. The story is about an optimistic lawyer faced with an inscrutable employee named Bartleby. Not long after starting his job, Bartleby moves into the office, stops doing most of his work and answers the lawyer's every request with "I would prefer not to." Bartleby later dies of malnutrition in jail. So first the definition and explanation of transcendentalism. Transcendentalism says that our knowledge of reality comes from an analysis of our own thought processes, rather than from scientific evidence. According to the transcendentalists, if God exists, he can be found through human intuition.
Henry David Thoreau is one of America's distinguished transcendentalists. Thoreau's masterwork was his book Walden, written during his time in solitude at Walden Pond. Alone in nature, Thoreau wrote down his beliefs and ideas, which was showing his transcend into madness. The idea that the human soul needs to be closer to nature than to other humans is one of the main ideas in transcendentalism. As already mentioned, Thoreau suggests that the simple way of life is the best and can be found through nature. However, humans are not capable of discovering this.
Stimulated by English and German Romanticism, the Transcendentalists operated with the sense that a new era was at hand. They were critics of their contemporary society for its unthinking conformity and urge that each person find in Emerson's words an original relation to the universe. Emerson and Thoreau sought this relation in solitude amidst nature and in their writing.
Bartleby in Bartleby the Scrivener exhibited many transcendentalist qualities and the result of those beliefs. Therefore, the transcendentalists would view Bartleby as one of their own kind. He can be seen as representing humanity, however, Bartleby had the possibility to be a great adult male. Possibly he was in his own kind, but society was not able to see it. The story setting is Wall Street, which represents money. Working is what humans do to survive, but Bartleby sits in an office on Wall Street doing nothing all day. The transcendentalists wanted to get away from the corruption and dirt of the city to the innocence and universe-revealing qualities of the countryside.
Transcendentalists, led by Ralph Emerson and Henry Thoreau, believed in the good of man and held a very optimistic view of the world and mankind.
Bartleby the Scrivener displays the main character Bartleby in transcendentalist ideas. Bartleby is a passive resistor. He refuses to leave his workplace and in result of his defiance, leads him to end up in jail. He works in front of the only window in the office, however, all he sees is a view of a brick wall. After a while, this sight becomes boring and leads Bartleby to melancholy. His attempt to transcend social norms of Wall Street leaves him homeless as he is kicked out of his workplace and home for not working. This to modern people is viewed as obvious, but to Bartleby it's not. He believed he could transcend the human needs of shelter and later food and water as he starves himself to death.
When the lawyer asked Bartleby to check the copy, he refused to work with the words, "I would prefer not to." That was the first sign of Bartleby's deep-seated passive resistance.
At the story's end, the lawyer informs the reader that he has heard rumors that Bartleby worked at a dead letter office. Dead letters are letters which, for some reasons or other, cannot be delivered to their intended destination. These are forms of failed communication. In that way, dead letters serve as a symbol for disconnection. Although dead letters do not play a big role in Herman Melville's story, they can be used as the origin of Bartleby's depressions. After years of destroyed communication and language, he may started to lose the believing in the system which provides space for jobs like his. This might be one of the reasons why he refuses to work normally at the lawyer office. "I prefer not to" is his way of refusing work and also a way of working up his trauma from his old job.
Later we find out that Bartleby is homeless and that he is always alone. The lawyer likely knows deep down that he did not do all he could do for Bartleby, which might be a reason therefore why he goes to see Bartleby once more in prison.
Individuals in an office job, is this possible? As the story of Bartleby shows, a normal office job does not always provide enough space to unfold your full range of individual skills. In an open space office are too many different types of people. Under these circumstances, it is not possible to work at your best and to be completely satisfied. These conditions also cause stress and depressions.
Early one morning, with time to kill, I borrowed Jeb's rifle and sat on the hill. I saw a lone rider crossing the plain. I drew a bead on him to practice my aim. My brother's rifle went off in my hand. A shot rang out across the land. The horse he kept running, the rider was dead. I hung my head, I hung my head. I set off running to wake from the dream. My brother's rifle went into the sheen. I kept on running into the Southlands. That's where they found me, my head in my hands. The sheriff, he asked me, why had I run? And then it came to me, just what I had done. And all for no reason, just one piece of lead. I hung my head, I hung my head. Here in the courthouse, the whole town was there. I see the judge high up in his chair. Explain to the courtroom what went through your mind, and we'll ask the jury what verdict they find. I felt the power of death over life. I orphaned his children, I widowed his wife. I beg their forgiveness, I wish I was dead. I hung my head, I hung my head, I hung my head, I hung my head. Early one morning, with time to kill, I see the gallows up on the hill. And out in the distance, a trick of the brain, I see a lone rider crossing the plain. And he come to fetch me to see what they done. And we'll ride together till kingdom come. I pray for God's mercy, cause soon I'll be dead. I hung my head, I hung my head, I hung my head, I hung my head.
Another aspect we will talk about concerning the short story Bartleby the Scrivener by Herman Melville is the doppelganger motif. We have prepared arguments for and against this topic because not all people think that Melville uses the doppelganger motif for his short story. But before we start, we will give you a brief information about what the doppelganger motif is in general.
In literature, a doppelganger is usually shaped as a twin shadow or a mirror image of a protagonist. It may be used to show the other self of a character which he or she has not discovered yet. This other self could be the darkest side of the character that troubles, or the brighter side that motivates. Hence, the use of doppelganger helps writers to portray complex characters. Moreover, doppelgangers enhance the complexity of a story. The doppelganger acts in a way that promises dire consequences for the main character who puts in efforts to undo the actions of his double. Sometimes the conflict is an inner one where a character tries to understand himself by understanding his doppelganger. So now that we know this, the real question is, does Herman Melville portray himself as the character of the lawyer and or as the character of Bartleby the Scrivener?
From my point of view, the doppelganger motif does appear in Herman Melville's Bartleby the Scrivener. Herman Melville was born in 1819 and died in 1891. At that time, people did not really speak their minds and they did not really stand up for themselves. With the character of Bartleby, who is always saying, "I prefer not to," Melville might have wanted to express his own opinion about the society back then. He might have wanted to tell people that he wanted to say, "No, I prefer not to," in so many cases when he could not risk giving no as an answer. This would mean Melville did indeed portray himself as Bartleby. But Bartleby is not the only character possibly portraying the author. The narrator, the lawyer, could also be a form of doppelganger of Herman Melville in the short story. The lawyer often refers to Bartleby as humanity, which could mean that even though Bartleby seems to have lost his mind, the lawyer still thinks of him as a normal person and that he might feel the same way. I also assume this is the reason why the lawyer never actually fires Bartleby. Maybe Melville felt some kind of sympathy for Bartleby and put his feelings into the character of the narrator.
In my opinion, the doppelganger motif does not appear in a Bartleby's The Scrivener. Even there are so many interpretations of the lawyer or even the author himself being Bartleby's doppelganger, I do not agree with those theories because, for example, the story is written from the lawyer's point of view. The lawyer, as he himself admits, is a man of assumptions and does not share any greater feelings than that. Another interpretation I've been seeing a lot is the connection between Melville, the author, and Bartleby. But from what I've read, I can tell that they do not share similarities. Respectively, he wrote stories he wanted to write about instead of doing copies in a small windowless room like Bartleby did.
We will never know what is true, if the two main characters are some sort of doppelgangers of Herman Melville or if they are doppelgangers of each other. But one thing is true. Back then, expressing someone's unusual feelings about society through a book was the easiest way to show someone did not agree with everybody else's opinion. This way, doppelgangers in literature were founded.
Till sleepless night turns to a new day, till breezy days carries my wet face, till many long deep sighs melt away. Sound a bitter smile die away. Be more strong and be more light. Be more firm and be more bright. All your chant will go away. I'll be here like a flower waiting to bloom, till breathless heart beats like it is new. Till blessing makes me start over new. Till an aflame gives life to I can see. light. Be more firm and be more bright. All your chant will work out. Till I let my sadness go away, I'll be here like a to bloom.
Another theme which can be linked to Bartleby the Scrivener is the American Dream. The American Dream can be defined as the idea that as long as you work hard, you will eventually be successful, no matter where you are from, which schools you attended, or how much money your parents have. A quote which eclipses this perfectly is from Dishwasher to Millionaire. The American Dream is based on the ideals liberty, equal rights, and opportunity. It includes the idea that people can achieve anything, including ascending social classes, due to hard work. The official first documentation of the American Dream is written nowhere else than in the Declaration of Independence. All men are created equal. The American Constitution mentions a similar ideal: secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. American exceptionalism is a term used to describe the glorification of anything American, declaring America to be uniquely superior to other countries. It includes the belief that American history is special and that it is America's mission to change the world. Despite that, many people are aware of the fact that the American Dream leads to certain expectations, which are rarely met. It is also a badly kept secret that, although there are many claims to the contrary, class and social standing still play an important role in leading to success. Several literary works have criticized and pointed out the faults in the American Dream, such as Fitzgerald's The Great Gatsby and Steinbeck's Of Mice and Men. James Truslow Adams mentioned in his book The Epic of America that the American Dream is not a dream of motor cars and high wages merely, but a dream of social order in which each man and each woman shall be able to attain to the fullest stature of which they are innately capable and be recognized by others for what they are, regardless of the fortuitous circumstances of birth or position. The American Dream also plays an important role in Bartleby the Scrivener. The lawyer Bartleby works for is torn between his ideals as a businessman and the desperate need to assure himself of his own humanity, prompting him to give Bartleby a certain amount of leeway. Another character who portrays the American Dream well is Nippers, who also works under Bartleby's boss. Nippers knew not what he wanted, or if he wanted anything, it was to be rid of a Scrivener's table altogether, Melville, 2366. While hating his job, Nippers still chooses to continue working there and trying to climb the social ladder, despite it causing him indigestion.
Bartleby, in contrast, refuses to do certain aspects of his job and does not accompany his colleagues to dinner. Bartleby also turns the lawyer's office in his living quarters, refusing to be part of the consumption of money. He sees the way the system manipulates people into wasting their energy and time for a 1-in-a-million chance of success. Bartleby refuses to become a part of this routine that is ingrained into nearly all members of society. At the end of the story, Bartleby dies, showcasing that you can either move with the tide or drown.
We started living in an old house. My mom gave birth and we were checking it out. It was a baby boy, so we bought him a toy. It was a raincoat, and it was 1981. We named him Baby. He had a toothache. He started crying. It sounded like an earthquake. It didn't last long because I stopped it. I grabbed a rag down and stuck some little pins in.
Got money and a little
It is truthfully no understatement to classify Herman Melville's Bartleby as one of history's most controversial works known to man. The several aspects reaching from the main character's denial to work, over his motives, to eventually his death, have left the readership with varying emotions, both while and after reading. But it might also be the allegorical touches Melville has filled his story with that grip our attention and leave us asking questions that cannot be answered uniformly. An allegory is by definition a story, play, poem, picture or other work in which the characters and events represent particular qualities or ideas that relate to morals, religion or politics. A concept that, after second inspection, shares surprisingly many qualities with Bartleby. In a sense, the character of Bartleby could be interpreted as an enemy of capitalism, which on the other hand is portrayed by the narrator or the figures of Nippers, Turkey and Gingernut. Their emotional dissatisfaction could be an allegory of the societal failure of capitalism, especially in America around both Bartleby's and Melville's time. The characters are puppets of their environment, simply living and behaving inside of a hierarchy established for them because they were told that this was right. Bartleby, as the polar opposite of this system, gets alienated, suddenly treated as an enemy by his surroundings and even ending up under arrest. His character operates as an allegory of rebellion, unaccepting of the position that is shaped for him and willing to bear the consequences that follow his dropout from the cycle. Goodbye and thank you for listening. Hannah and the Sophisticated 7BC Serenaders.
When we were young, we pledged allegiance every morning of our lives. The classroom rang with children's voices under teacher's watchful eye. We learned about the world around us at our desks and at dinner time. Reminded of the starving children, we cleaned our plates with guilty minds. And the stones in a row, they shone like diamonds in the voice called to us to make our way back home. When I was 10, my father held me on his shoulders above the crowd to see a train draped in mourning pass slowly through our town. His widow kneeled with all the children at the sacred burial ground, and the TV glowed that long hot summer with all the cities burning down. Stones in the road flew out from the bicycle tires. Worlds removed from all those fires as we raced each other home. The starving children have been replaced by souls out on the street. We give a dollar when we pass and hope our eyes don't meet. We pencil in, we cancel out, we crave the corner sweet. We kiss your ass, we make you whole, and we don't. Stones in the road fly out from beneath our wheels, and another deal before we get back home. Stones in the road leave a mark from whence they came. A thousand points of light or shame, baby, I don't know. A storm.